Emily Elizabeth, and I'm the host of the What Fulfills You podcast, a show for and about individuals always seeking to be their best selves. On this show, we talk all about building the mindset, finding the right careers, creating meaningful relationships, and so much more. Welcome to the What Fulfills You podcast. Friends, welcome back to another episode of What Fulfills You. My name is Emily Elizabeth. I'm your host, and welcome if this is your first time hearing my voice and tuning in to the podcast. For today's episode, I have on Jamie Rakicki. She is a lovely friend and also an entrepreneur, author, and creative visionary dedicated to helping others design a life of confidence, purpose, and elevated living. How aligned is she for the podcast? So for those of you who have not been listening for a while, this is actually the second time she's appearing on the podcast. The first time was around like mid-2022, maybe even early 2022. It was like my first year living in New York. I discovered her on Instagram, found her real estate page and just her content and all that. As always, I think it's so amazing to interview people with different backgrounds, interests, expertise. And this time around, we dove into a little bit more and even on a deeper level. She has a background as a senior executive in the fashion industry, which we talked a little bit about. She's also a top-ranked luxury real estate broker, and she's also the founder of an interior design firm and amongst so many other things. On this episode, we focus the conversation around how our thoughts shape our reality and how so much of the things that are thrown at us in life, we can reframe and redirect the direction of our life based on our mindset and our mind alone. And so obviously this topic is very aligned with What Fulfills You and my personal beliefs and core themes for this podcast as well. I know you guys will really enjoy and have a lot of takeaways from this episode because it's kind of like that older sister wisdom you wanted and or needed. So with that being said, let's welcome back Jamie to the podcast. Jamie, thank you so much for coming on for round two. I think you're actually maybe the second guest that's on for round two.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on even once, yet twice. So thank you for having me.
Yes. I want to start a little bit because I find your career trajectory very fascinating. And I think with the women listening to this podcast, a lot of them are ambitious in their own ways. They're curious about different industries. And I know you've been in different industries from fashion to real estate and now mostly doing your own thing. So can you share a little bit about the fashion life and the world? And because I don't think we actually talked about that last time.
Yeah.
And the glamorous and the not so glamorous and just some realistic expectations. I mean, it's funny too. It's fashion week right now as we're recording. So I feel like it's like the perfect time.
Yeah. So I worked in the fashion industry 20 plus years, but not in like the fun fashion side, like not where you're like doing runway shows. Yeah. I was more in the sales and operations side. Okay. Not that that's not fun, right?
But yeah.
It was more like running the retail stores and the business.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, I spent 7 years at Hugo Boss running the sales and operations for North America. And that was a really incredible job because I had a tie to the global office. I was in Germany like every 6 to 8 weeks working with the global teams as well. Mm-hmm. And I also oversaw all of the United States and Canada from a sales and operations perspective. So I got to put all the policies in place, create all the systems, mm-hmm. implement everything. And I think for me, that was really fulfilling because I was building a team and helping people mm-hmm. to get where they wanted to go in their career trajectory.
Yeah.
And being able to manage like a dozen different projects at a time.
Okay.
And it really helped me to build a really strong business acumen.
Mm.
One of the things I really learned is like how to read the room. And also how to build relationships across departments, because oftentimes what I wanted implemented needed to be implemented or created by another team, right? Whether it was the marketing team or it was the IT team or just getting approval from our global office. So that relationship building and getting people to understand what you need and getting them bought into it, I think was the biggest skill set that I learned. But I got to a point where it was like, it was September-ish 2019.
Okay.
And I just was feeling like, what else is there for me? I've always been very entrepreneurial at heart. Mm-hmm. I was able to build that team myself and create a department that didn't really exist.
Yeah.
So like that was really fun for me, okay. like getting to create and like be in control. And then once I felt like I hit a certain executive level, I was like, wait, is this really what I want though?
Right.
Like, do I really, you know, the ego part was like, you want to be this.
Yeah.
But that when I really like self-reflected, I was like, is this really the life that I want? Mm. And even if I become president, let's just say, do I really want that? Or is that my ego that wants it because they want it wants the title? And that was like a really like honest conversation I had to have with myself. I had a former CEO reach out to me and say, a recruiter friend of mine is looking for a C-level role in a startup industry. It's a completely different industry than you've ever done. You should take the job.
Mm.
And I was like, it's not really my thing. Like, it was like a golf entertainment startup. And I'm like, I like pretty things. Like, yeah. this is not my vibe. And okay. he was like, no, just do it. Just have the interview. So I did that. I went on the interview. I ultimately got hired. And it allowed me to be a bit more entrepreneurial because we were growing something that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting for me.
So you actually were there for a period?
Yeah. So I left after 7 years at Boss. I left in October 2019.
Oh, wow.
We all know how the world right. evolved yeah, come 2020.
Yeah.
So the timing was flawless. But no, it was a great opportunity for me to be able to kind of step out of that corporate, super hyper structured environment.
Yeah.
And try something different. And it's funny because when I went on the interview, when I met the CEO of that startup, as soon as I walked in the door, mm-hmm. I'm like a very instinctual person. Like I can feel it right away. I can feel it with people. I can feel it in environments. And I was like, I know that this is not the right fit for me. But there was a part of me that want. Can I curse on here?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah. I just don't want to get you in trouble. Like the meteor or anything.
Yeah.
I wanted to fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a, it wasn't a messy fuck around and find out. It was mm-hmm. like a controlled, like I'm consciously choosing to do this
because
I want to stress to myself. I want to see what I'm capable of doing
outside
of this world that I've only ever known because I had only worked in the, you know, corporate retail environment for, you know, right out of college or in the midst of college through my mid 30s. And I was like, I need to do it.
Yeah.
And just see.
Yeah.
So I wanted to fuck around and find out. It was a very controlled, like conscientious decision to do it.
Yeah.
But I knew it wasn't the right fit for me. Okay. But it taught me some really great things about, you know, R&D and building a company from the ground up and structure and running a public company and like sitting on the earnings calls and sitting with the, you know, the investment team and just speaking a different language from it was a skill set that I didn't have.
Yeah.
And even though it was October to July.
Yeah.
You know, I learned so much. So it was very much worth that experience. And it taught me that I actually don't want to work for someone.
Okay.
And I've always kind of known this about myself. Like
I
have visions and I have ideas and I'm not really great. I can execute.
Yeah.
But I don't want to execute someone else's vision.
Right.
And I think that experience really opened my eyes. Was like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore.
Totally.
So it was July 2020. The world was collapsing.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'm never going to back to work for someone again.
Yeah.
Because in my mind the entire time, it was like security comes with a corporate job.
Mm.
So I had it.
Yeah.
And then the world collapsed and they were like, you're fired. You're laid off. You're whatever. And I was like, great. Yeah. I'm free. I'm finally free. It was the best day of my life.
I love that. I mean, a couple of things that I think are notable. Well, first off, your style is impeccable.
Thank you.
And I feel like something I often talk about when it comes to figuring out potential career paths is just exploring what you naturally mm-hmm. like, right? So is fashion something, I would assume so, but I feel like I should ask, is that something you've always been naturally inclined towards? Is that why you went into fashion? Because you always had interest, like natural interest in it? Or
so I always loved fashion from like a kid. And I grew up like always wanting to be around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to watch like Fashion Week with my mom on TV and like mm-hmm. the runway shows. But it wasn't why I got into it. The whole reason I ended up in this industry was I was going to college and I was working part time at Banana Republic in the Americana Manhasset. And because I grew up on Long Island and it was like the Rodeo Drive of, you know, of the retail world.
Okay.
And it was never supposed to be anything but a part-time job.
Okay.
And then my mom got sick when I was in college, and I was, I think, probably the most responsible employee that they had that wasn't like older.
Yeah.
So they offered me a management role that was full-time, and it was a really big salary, and it came with benefits. And my mom was, you know, diagnosed with cancer. We needed the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make a choice. It was like, do I finish going to school for something where I didn't even know what I wanted to do?
Mm.
Or do I take this role to help my family?
Wow.
And for me, it was like, it was a no brainer. It was like, do what I can to help my family now. I can always go back to school. So the caveat with that job was like, I had to have open availability. I had to be able to work whenever they needed me as the manager.
Mm.
So I took that role, and then it kind of propelled into this career that I never intended to have. I went from running, being store managers, to then being regional managers at different companies throughout the fashion industry. And then it ultimately led to me to this kind of corporate career that took off that was never my intention. So it kind of happened inadvertently. And it's not because I don't love fashion. Would I have found my way there out of the gate? I don't know. It's kind of how it happened organically.
Yeah.
But it taught me so much. And, you know, it was a really valuable experience.
You were doing so well in just in corporate, but also like in the fashion world, like from a career level. What do you think is a universal lesson women can take from you on excelling at their career in whatever field? Because earlier you mentioned that you know how to execute, which is also why you're able to work for yourself. And I think that's a big element that, you know, I'll take a jab at Gen Z. I mean, I'm technically Gen Z too, but I'm like the first year of it. But I think, you know, I've certainly seen it myself where there's this element of lack of awareness of if you want to really like work on your own or like work for yourself, there's also execution.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just like, oh, I can make a bunch of different TikToks or whatever and float, right? Like there's, you know, just wait. I mean, like I don't know, and I consider myself savvy. It's, you know, the day like another 2008 happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, because I personally haven't really lived through one that was significant besides like 2020, right? And that was also like my first year out of college. So I was like, you know, I went through the pandemic, but in terms of like those, you know, major recessions and those moments where like everyone's like panicking, you know, even I haven't really lived through that. And I feel like I get that mentality from my parents where they're always like, you know, make sure you have that stability,
yeah,
right? And at least make sure you can rely on your skill set to build and bring home bacon, if you will, right? And also to be safe enough if something were to happen, yeah, in whatever circumstance. And I feel like I just don't see that being talked about enough for this next generation of entrepreneurial thinkers and creators, of course, like a world that I'm in. So what are your thoughts on that?
Come explore the wild heart of Utah with Oars. No notifications, no meetings, no signal. Just you, the river, and the space to reconnect with what matters most. From one-day adventures in Dinosaur National Monument to week-long journeys through canyonlands and beyond, Oars delivers unforgettable guided rafting experiences on some of the most iconic rivers in the West. Visit oars.com/Utah to start planning your next great adventure. Let's go rafting!
Yeah, so I will say, like, now being out of that really structured environment and working for myself, the thing that has saved me is my discipline. And it's, mm-hmm, so ingrained in me because I grew up riding horses and was a professional, mm-hmm, equestrian. So like from a very young age, I was like learned discipline really early.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, taking that into my corporate life, that discipline, I think, was such a core fundamental part of my success. But I struggle today working for myself, and as I'm trying to build new things, mm-hmm, and figure out the, you know, all of these social media platforms, like the execution, I'm a visionary and like I have the ideas and I've always had a team underneath me to execute.
Mm.
Now I know how I want it to look and I can make sure the execution's flawless.
Yeah.
But through other people. So now having to do it myself, there are moments where I'm like, oh my God, this is so much work. And like,
yeah,
is this the best use of my time and my skill set to be like, you know, trying to edit a video for 90 minutes? So what I have learned, and you gain this with age, right?
Yeah.
Like I know where my weaknesses are and where my strengths are. So I know that I'm a really strong leader and I can lead through people.
Mm.
I also know that, like, I am a control freak and I also want things to be a certain way. So yeah. I have the hard time now of, like, now that I'm building my own brands, it's like letting go a bit.
Okay.
But I need to. But going back to your question, I think the really big thing for women in the corporate world is, like, you have to not be afraid to speak up for yourself. Mm. You have to have the confidence in yourself and your skill set to know what you bring to the table. Yeah. One of my biggest challenges when I worked at Boss was, you know, it was a German company and it was led in the global office
mm-hmm.
by German men. And like mm-hmm. the key departments that I needed to go to, even in our New York office to execute, were all men, right? Oh. Who had been doing this for years,
okay.
who are like, no, we know better. And you have to be able confident enough in your skill set to know that what you're doing is going to make the right difference.
Mm.
But I like to say that your idea is only as good as the person on your team who believes in it the least. So getting that buy-in and getting people to be bought into what you're doing and understand why you're doing it
yeah.
and become as equally as excited about it as you are, I think is such a key piece of any success. Because if I'm coming to you and you're the one who's going to execute this project for me
mm-hmm.
and you're like, she's batshit crazy. There's yeah. no way this can be done.
Yeah.
And you're always going to have that person, right? That person's always going to be out there. And I think you have to focus more on like the people who really believe. But the goal really is to get everyone so bought into that vision
mm.
so that they are like, we see it too. And we want to make this happen.
Yeah.
But if you have someone working on your team, and it's like a big energy thing that I'm learning as I'm studying Kabbalah too, is like, the energy of that person who doesn't believe in it is somewhere down the line going to maybe intentionally or unintentionally sabotage it.
Yeah.
And you really have to be careful with who you surround yourself with,
yeah.
who's on your team. But getting those partners to be bought into what you're doing, I think it comes from quality of work. It comes from being consistent, really knowing what you're doing, mm-hmm. knowing your numbers, being really engaged. And, you know, it's not just there's no fluff. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not a big fluff person. I'm like, cut through the fluff. Like, if fine, it's going to take 6 months. Great. Now tell me how we can do it in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, what is the path? Like, I'm someone who's like, if there's a brick wall, like, find the loose brick.
Right.
If you can't, like, break through the wall. Like,
yeah.
there's always a way. And I think the more you lead by example and act that way, the mm-hmm. people around you will either elevate to your level.
Yeah.
Or they'll disappear.
Yeah.
But it really comes through consistency and leading by example. And
yeah.
I like to say, like, be so good you can't be ignored.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come from being noisy, right?
It
just comes from being consistent and doing really high quality work.
And it's funny, too, when you say that, like, for me, I see the impact of being that way as an entrepreneur. Like, of course, one part of my business is my marketing agency. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my mentality is, like, now my portfolio is at this point, all referrals, right? And I'm sure you've been in that part of business where you know you are good or great or exceptional mm-hmm. if people are consistently referring
Absolutely.
You, right? And so to me, I see the parallel for those who work for an employer is that if you're not sure if your manager would refer you to the next company, you probably should be focused on, you know, doing well and at least like leaving a good mm-hmm. impression or, you know, taking the lead. Because I think sometimes too, and maybe you could, you know, share your thoughts on this, but sometimes I think people get caught up in, well, I'm only paid XYZ. So why should I put in XYZ effort, right? But I think the irony is that especially when your first couple years out of college, like that is your best shot to mm-hmm. like, you know, it compounds over time. Like, you know, when you're 24, you might not be making this six-figure salary yet, but like, you know, a year later, you might get shot up to like some executive position because someone was like watching that whole year of how well you were doing.
100%. It's like, you know, I always say, like, and I learned this from my grandfather who, you know, till the day he passed away, like 86, he would get up every morning and be in a suit by 6 a.m. sitting on the couch.
Oh,
like
really?
He was one of the top stock brokers back in the day when like stocks were done by hand. And he had all of these different businesses and he always looked amazing. Like, it didn't matter. My grandmother and my grandfather, they always looked amazing. It didn't matter what time of the day it was. And it kind of like ingrained in me, like, you dress for the job you want. Mm-hmm. And not only in physical dressing, but also in the way that you work and in how you handle everything that you do.
Yeah.
And I like to always leave things better than I found them.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a mindset shift from, you know, today's generation. And for all of us, like, we have every resource at our fingertips.
Yeah.
Like, there's no excuse to not be successful because mm-hmm. we all have the tools, but everyone wants the result really fast without doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the true core way to build something lasting and meaningful is you've got to do the work.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point about like, oh, well, I only make X, why should I do it? Well, if that's your mindset, yeah. then you're probably always going to be stuck at X because mm-hmm. even if you go and work for yourself, that money is not flowing consistently. Like, being an entrepreneur is hard. There's months yeah. where you just, there's nothing that's coming and there's no consistency mm-hmm. and there's no health insurance. You're mm-hmm. paying for that yourself. Like
yeah.
the cost of everything is astronomical in building a business. So if you can't teach yourself the discipline to do it really well for someone else, how are you going to be able to do it on your own?
Totally.
And I think that that's like a generational thing in a world where everything moves really fast and everyone thinks that they're entitled to something.
Yes.
No one's entitled to anything.
Yeah.
Your hard work is what gets you there. Mm-hmm. And look, some people have quick wins and that's amazing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it. And I respect the hell out of those people. But I think, you know, the average person probably has to work a little bit harder than they are in order to get the result. And yeah. that's really where it comes from. Like, think about it. If your name was on the door of that company that mm-hmm. you're only getting X amount of dollars working mm-hmm. for, do you want to employ people who only are going to do the bare minimum?
Right.
Like, you have to look at everything through the lens if I was the business owner.
Right.
And that's such a mindset shift.
Yeah.
But I think if you can do that, you can always, like, I always like to look at everything from like a helicopter view.
Yeah.
And put myself on the other side of the coin, right? In the other person's shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're such a mean leader. Are they, or are they just really trying to run a great business?
Like, right.
if you're only giving X mm-hmm. and it was your company, would you want them to employ you?
Right.
And I think when you start to look at it really objectively and yeah. take yourself out of the equation, I hope that that can wake some people up to just giving them bare minimum.
Definitely. And it's funny because I think shifting a little bit into your real estate career, right? We talked about this at coffee the other day, but you know, some of your clientele, I know one we talked about, you mentioned was like a 23-year-old tech entrepreneur mm-hmm. at some point, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are you observing in people like him or her and some of the clients you've sold homes to? What are some of the biggest differences that they're affording these multi-million dollar homes and they're in their 20s and early 30s?
Yeah. They work really freaking hard.
Yeah.
You know, they're on 24/7. They're dialed in, they're committed, you know, where do they live a lavish lifestyle now because they've done what they've done and they've sold their companies? Absolutely. But they're still working 24/7.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, this whole like work-life balancing, I don't know if I fully believe it. I think there's mm-hmm. not their clear-cut work-life balance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to find balance in the moments and yeah. there's going to be moments where you're giving 2,000% and there's going to be moments where you're like, oh, I can breathe.
Right.
But I think they work really, really hard. They're really laser-focused.
Mm.
But you know what it is? They have blind confidence in themselves.
You've noticed that in every...
Every single one. Yeah, and they truly believe in wow. themselves. And I think that really is... the most important thing, because how can you sell an idea to someone if you don't believe in it yourself?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go, we're talking about how to, you know, to get people to respect you in the corporate world.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you have to really believe truly in your core in what you're trying to accomplish, because there's no way that you're going to get someone else to be bought in to do it for you
yeah.
if you're not bought into it to yourself. And that just comes with confidence, that comes with time, that comes with trial and error and figuring it out,
because yeah.
confidence doesn't just come. It comes right. from consistently showing up, getting kicked in the face and standing back up and doing it over
yeah.
and over again.
Yeah.
Until you, you know, until you're like, oh, I went through that. I know I can do it.
Right.
Like, what is the worst thing you've ever gone through and got on the other side of?
Yeah.
Great. That's your, like, now that's your data point for totally. How you can do it again.
How are you navigating periods of, like, when you shifted into real estate and let's say you go through a phase of time where you haven't sold anything yet? What's it like mentally and financially? And also maybe some tips for those who are also in a line of business like that, whether they're in real estate or something where they're getting paid like a big lump sum, you know, but in different chunks of time, right? Like not like a consistent, I don't know, 10K a month or something, right? Like how did you learn to navigate the mental and actual practical side of that?
Yeah, it's one of the things that, you know, you don't, when you start working for yourself, there's no like playbook for, then no one explains to you, and then the self-employment tax and all of the things. So it's interesting because when I left that startup job in July of 2020, my old boss at Hugo Boss was like, come back, we never filled your role. You know, I had so many opportunities to go back into the corporate world, and I was like, I am never working for someone else again. Like that security blanket of feeling like a corporate job was safe, I was like, no, the only person I'm betting on going forward is myself. And I was like defiant in it. And so I had always wanted to do real estate just because I loved it, and I thought it was fun because it was a hobby for me.
Okay.
So I decided I was going to do that against all of my family's advice to, like, you know, not have health insurance in a pandemic and all of the things, and or a salary.
Right.
And I was like, it's fine. So when I started, I knew out of the gate that I didn't want to be running around doing a million transactions. I didn't want to work on the low end of the market. I didn't want to do rentals. And everyone was like, you've got to do rentals for a year. You've got to learn the ropes. You've got to do this. You've got to join a team. And I was like, I was like responsible for $1 billion in sales all across the country and working on like 9 different time zones and in Europe. Like I'm sure I can figure this out. There's a little bit of like arrogance in me, but it was more, but it was really like confidence in myself too. Right. Yeah, it's like, no, I know what I know I can do this.
Yeah.
And I know what my expectation is for myself. Like I don't have any desire to work in that end of the market. So I was laser focused that I only wanted to work in the high end of the market.
Yeah.
So I didn't sell anything for a year.
Okay.
I made $0 for a year. And then when I started like actually like doing really big deals, people were like, you did that so fast. And I was like, no, you don't, just because it looks that way on social media, like you don't know what it was really like.
Yeah.
But no, I was like, you know, you have to get really laser focused on like what your goal is and know that it's going to be very uncomfortable. Whether you're like, I'm starting 2 different brands right now from scratch, not in the real estate space. And there's no money coming in. It's pouring out of my own pockets. But when you're so committed to what your vision is, like you just have to get really comfortable with that uncomfortable period, but know that it's a moment.
Yeah.
It's a moment in time.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that you have to get really disciplined with is like the taxes will come.
Yeah.
You know, you're spitting out all this money. You're earning money, but you're re-putting it back into the business for marketing costs and fulfillment and all of the things. So that money's not really yours. Yet you're still paying tax like you have it. So planning for that's really important. Planning for self-employment tax and understanding the implications of that, you know, LLC versus S-Corp. Getting really great financial planners and like people around you is so, so important. And then just budgeting. Like, you know, knowing that you're going to have, you can have periods where you go, you know, 6 months or so, especially if you're in the real estate space. You know, if you're doing lots of small deals, you're probably, your income probably feels more consistent. I chose to really to do the big deal. So then the really big checks come.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because like I wanted the really big checks. It was just like I can relate more to that clientele. Right.
Got
like,
it.
I can connect with them. I get where they're coming from. I understand their goals. I, you know, have worked on the global on a global scale before. So like, it's just easier for me to connect and relate from a business perspective. And I just felt like it was a better use of my time. But if you're doing, so if you're not comfortable doing that and waiting 6-8 months for money to come,
right?
Because you never know when something's going to close or when a deal is going to fall through, because life happens and, and people pull out of things. Then you can go and do the smaller things. But I always felt like if I were to do that just to fill that void, like that would be coming from a place of lack.
Yes.
And I always try to avoid, like, even so I had like this anxious moment this morning. I was like, oh, I'm building these things and like there's no money coming. I'm just going to do this. And I was like, no, because if I do this, that energy is coming from a place of lack. That's going to feed into this project I'm working on. And like I had to have that conversation with myself. I'm very good now at like catching it. Where I used to not be aware of it and then it spiral. So like now I can catch when it comes. But I think you have to really like train yourself to know when you're going to make a decision because you're feeling fear or lack.
Yeah.
And then what is the implication if you actually like are reactive that way versus right. being proactive and just being confident enough in yourself
yeah.
that the money will come. And look, we all have bills to pay, and I'm not saying like, you know, go be reckless.
Right.
But I think that any energy you put outside of what your true goal is,
yeah,
like you're draining that energy, right? Mm-hmm. So is that really the answer?
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, it's not. It's like get really laser focused on the thing you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
And figure out how you can accomplish it faster.
For sure.
Versus like getting scatterbrained and like trying to like get a quick win. Because we all know when we've like jumped into the relationship because we're lonely yeah. or we've done the thing out of like fear, how yeah. it turns out.
Yeah.
Like I think there's a million stories out there.
For sure. And it's funny as you share all that, I think I relate to it so much because I think the luck that I had early on in life was doing the harder thing mm-hmm. in the moment. And I've told you off air before, like for me, it was because of this college breakup. And I really genuinely felt like I had no choice but to like lean into this, like developing myself as a young 20-some-year-old at the time. And so I think the natural short-term win would have been like, all right, dive into college parties, go date mm-hmm. around, right? And I really was, you know, so sad, heartbroken, taking care of our dog at the time that I just was like, I don't know what to do besides like, I don't know, there's this guy named Tony Robbins. I really like his podcast. So I started listening, you know, but I think like, to your point, it was like leaning into that energy versus leaning into like, I'm going to go numb myself. I'm going to go forget right. about him. Like, you know, all of those things. And it was just that simple decision. And I saw myself winning like 8 months later. Like I saw the effect of it, but I also see so many people do choose, whether it's from a breakup or from, you know, anxious about money. Again, all practical things yeah. and realistic things that we all face. But the harder decision, I've, of course, can reflect on, and sounds like you as well, the harder decision leads to a more fruitful long-term impact in your life, right. whatever that may be.
100%. Like yeah. everything is hard in its own way, right? So yeah. like not being healthy is hard.
Yeah.
Working out is hard. So it's like, you know, and this is not my quote, but like I'm a big fan of Cody Sanchez. I think she has a really great podcast, right? Uh-huh. But like she's like, choose your heart. And I think that that's a yeah. really, it's very valid. And I think it's a really important thing because nothing is easy.
Yeah.
It's hard to be single. It's hard to be in a relationship that's yeah. not healthy. So yeah. like, which were you choosing and yeah. where you put your energy is like, focus on being the best version of you.
Yeah.
And then the right things will naturally come. Or you'll yeah. be set up for the moment and prepared
yeah.
for when it comes to you, when the opportunity strikes, right? And totally. I think that that's really important. And, you know, when I was back in the retail days, early on in my career, like when I worked in the stores, there was always this panic before corporate came. Like they'd be like, oh my God, corporate's coming this week. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to work 24/7. There was one night where I think that's why they ended up offering me that manager job at Ben Henry. Like, because I literally stayed in the store, worked overnight. I think I worked 32 hours straight to help them prepare for this really, really big corporate visit. Like back in the day, Mickey Drexler was the CEO, and I think he went to J. Crew, and like, you know, he's iconic in the retail industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was coming, and he had like, you know, it was like this big thing. And I was like, of course, like we're going to make it perfect. Like I'm going to be here until the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, the learning, what I learned then when I became on the corporate level and I was the one visiting was like, and trying to teach the team is like, if you're prepared every day, you never have to be stressed about when the opportunity, like when you're going to get a visit. True. Right. That's but if you imply true. That in life,
yeah,
you show up prepared every day, the best version of yourself. When those opportunities come your way, like you're ready for them.
Yeah.
And how many times did we maybe miss something because we weren't the best version of ourselves
or
we
so weren't good. Prepared?
So
I say that all the time about dressing well mm-hmm. and looking good, because you never know, you might meet your, you know, future husband yeah. or whatever. Because first impressions, you only have one chance to mm-hmm. make a first impression.
Yeah. And it's not vain. It's just like, yeah. you know, if you want to attract this person yeah. if they're at this level, then yeah. like you have to make sure that you're at that level. And mm-hmm. I think that that's, you know, it's an accountability on yourself. And it's taken me years to like really wrap my brain around it. But yeah. I think it's so, so important.
I want to dive into more about your personal life and health and a little bit mm-hmm. of the things I shared with you over coffee, that some of which I had no idea actually had happened. I think it's maybe better for you to like start that journey too. But I think let's dial it back to when you were 27, and you know, you can share the story in your own ways, and yeah. I'll kind of ask from there.
Yeah. So when I was 27, my mom passed away. It was really traumatic for me. She had been cancer-free for, I don't know, 3-4 years, and she kind of was like the center of my universe. Mm-hmm. I was traveling for work. It was the middle of May, and she was like, I need to go to the hospital right now. Like, I need you to come home. And I was like, I'm hours away. Like, I can't get there. You know, call my brother. And, wow. You know, he got there and took care of her. And that was like end of May. And, you know, by July 24th, she had passed. And it was like an extremely traumatic thing for me, because I was like, I have to be able to save her. Mm. Right. Like, I had built my whole life was really centered around making sure my family was always okay. So the career I had, yeah. I never wanted to really be in the retail industry, but I took that job because my mom was sick and I needed to help our family. And then my whole corporate career kind of spiraled in a good way from that moment. Mm. But was it really about me? I don't know. Everything I had built for my mom.
Yeah.
And I hadn't done it for myself. So it was like this massive loss, not only of losing my mom, but also like, who am I now? Like, who am I without my purpose?
Right.
For me at that time, my purpose was my family and it was my mom. Mm-hmm. So losing her, like, that loss was so devastating, and it was an unexpected loss. Mm-hmm. And look, we kind of thought it would happen, but she always had overcome everything. So I was like, no, there's no way she's going to die. Like, that can't happen.
Wow.
And then she did. And, you know, that was like a confidence shaker for me, because I thought I could fix her and I couldn't. And then I was like, who am I now? Like, I don't need to work hard. What am I working hard for?
Right.
What am I doing with my life? Like, all of these things. So at that point, I was working at Hugo Boss. But it was a great job and it was fine, but I lost kind of my sense of self. And then like 6 months went by and I started having these blinding headaches, and I knew they weren't migraines because I grew up with migraines as a kid. So I went to doctors. I'm like, this isn't normal. These headaches are like, they're changing my personality. I can't function. I can't think. Like, I need, something's wrong. And they're like, at that point, I think I was like 28. They're like, you're not even 30 yet. You're too young. You're just depressed. You can't get over your mom's loss. You need a Xanax and a therapist. Mm. Like, you're grieving. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes, but this is not that. Mm-hmm. And I think like almost a year and a half went by, and I saw almost 7 doctors, I think, and not one of them would do an MRI despite my health insurance. Not one of them took me seriously. Everyone made me feel like I was making it up. Like, it was in my head. And I really was just depressed, and I couldn't overcome this loss.
Wow.
Which part of it was true, but the other part of it was like, I know that this isn't right, but I was still so emotionally distraught from my mom that I couldn't even advocate for myself.
Yeah.
And then one night I was out drinking with a colleague, and I drank a little bit too much. A lot too much. It was like we were coming up at like one of those Brooklyn bars where the stairs come up versus go down. And I tripped and I smacked my face on the pavement. And I was like so blown up and like, but just disgusted with myself that I like drank that much and like let this happen. Mm. I went home, like cried myself to sleep, and like I woke up the next day and like my face was crazy swollen. So I went to CityMD. And they saw me and they're like, well, we really need to do an MRI to make sure you didn't fracture something in your face, because the swelling is like not okay.
Yeah.
And that was the whole reason that they did an MRI.
Wow.
And then they sent me for a stat. I think like 4 or 5 hours later, they called me and they're like, we need you to come in and see the doctor. And I was like, I'm not wasting my time coming back. Like, what do you need? Like, I was like, so, like the chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
I was like, just tell me. And they're like, no, you need to come in.
Oh, God.
And then I just had this sinking feeling. I was like, I just knew it in a very calm way that something was wrong. Like, I knew it. I felt it. There was no doubt that like they were going to tell me something really significant. And it was like not a panic. It was just a calm. And then I went in and they told me that I had a brain tumor. Wow. They sent me, you know, they gave me some neurologist recommendations. And I went and saw a couple different ones for different opinions, and then ultimately decided to use Weill Cornell because that doctor was like the number one brain surgeon at the time. But, you know, I had a benign brain tumor. The reason I was having such bad headaches was because it was taking up too much space between my brain and my skull. You have like a limited amount of space, and the more it grows, the more space it takes up, and that's why you get headaches. I was very, very lucky with the fact that it was in a dumb part of my brain. It wasn't attached to any organs or any, it wasn't going to impact any motor skills. And they said to me, you're 30 years old, you're healthy. Otherwise, like, the best thing to do is go in, be aggressive, do a craniotomy and take out the brain tumor. They're like, that sounds terrifying, but there's nothing safer than going in and doing that. Because if it continues to grow, the repercussions of that, if it attaches itself to an organ or, you know, I don't know, that part of my life is such a blur to me. It's 15 years ago at this point.
Wow.
It was like incredibly traumatic in that moment, but it was like, all right, this is what I've got to do. And I'm super lucky because that team was incredible and they treated me so well. And I have a lot of hair, so they were very respectful with how they shaved my head, and like the scar is very minimal. But that was a big confidence, like life-changing thing, not only from a health perspective, but also I just felt so lost. And then I went for like a 6-month follow-up MRI and they're like, well, there's something there. We should probably go back in.
Wow.
And I was like, I had just started like feeling back to myself. I'm like, what do you mean? I can't do this again. Like, this is great. Like, I can't go through this again. And they're like, you've got to go through it again. So I went through it a second time. But I think the biggest thing for me, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it made me wake up and it made me live. And I say now that like, I feel like my mom pushed me, because had that not happened, I don't know where I would have been.
Right.
I was spiraling in such a like depressed, dark way. And I felt like I had no purpose and no will for anything.
Yeah.
And it made me wake up and it made me really be so appreciative of life and let go and understand like, everything happens as it happens, and the only thing you can control is your reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. Where my life really changed after that is after that second surgery, I went back to work.
Yeah.
And they called me in the Friday before the Monday I was supposed to go back. And HR sat me down and they're like, so while you were out, we did some restructuring and we've had to eliminate your position. So you can basically either not have a job, or you can take this entry level administrative role in our operations department that like kind of doesn't exist.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I've worked so hard for this career that I built.
Wow.
And like now I've gained weight. I don't feel like myself because I have this scar. I'm self-conscious. Like I was so embarrassed by like having a brain tumor because I felt like it made me weak.
Mm.
That only in my family and like HR and my boss knew. Because I didn't want anyone to know, because I was like mortified by it. And now I was going to lose my job, like my identity. When I tell you, I was like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I have. And they're like, so she like slides me this like manila envelope and she's like, offers in here. Just like go home. Don't open it now. Don't open it now. But like go home and think about it. So like I leave. I get on the sub and I open it. And it's like a 60% salary cut. And I'm like, the ego was like egoing. I'm like, I'm not taking this demotion. This is embarrassing. And now you're cutting my salary.
Wow.
And but then I was like, okay, what are my options?
Right.
I need health insurance.
Right.
I'm in no position to go like applying for jobs. At that point in my life, I like the thought of even being an entrepreneur wasn't even
because
on my radar.
30, 31?
I was like 31 at this point.
Okay.
So like my whole identity was like my career. It was all I had.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's gone.
Wow.
So I went home and like had a meltdown and then decided to like take myself for a walk. And I was like, you know what? This is going to be a good thing. Look at it. Like remove yourself from the situation. You don't have to travel all the time anymore. Little than I know. You'll work 9 to 5. You'll be in the office. You'll have be able to have a personal life. Like I started talking myself into it. And then my ego was like, and yeah, you know what? You're going to be the best fucking operations assistant they've ever seen, because they want you to quit because they don't want to get in trouble for like releasing your job while you're on a medical leave.
Right.
Which is like probably probably not legal, which is why they offered me this. And they probably offered me this thinking I would say no. And I was like, fuck you. I'm going to be the best. And I literally was like, I'm going to take the rest of this Friday. I'm going to take Saturday. I'm going to mope and I'm going to be like miserable.
Yeah.
But like Sunday afternoon, I'm going to get myself together and I'm going to walk in there on Monday and I am going to be extraordinary and they're not going to be able to ignore me. And I did. And I ended up leaving there. They allowed me to create a department. A year later, I was promoted, running a department that I created and built an entire team. And I left there as a senior director.
Oh, wow. So
I took that opportunity where I could have just been mad at the world and angry and like angry at them for taking away my career.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no, this is an opportunity. And I am not going to give anything less than the best because my expectation of myself is that I always do great work. Right. So I'm going to go do great work despite how I feel.
Mm.
And, you know, my career propelled there. I was very lucky that the person I worked for, he had come from the UK and he saw my work ethic and he believed in me and he gave me a shot and he was like, you run the department, and he let me build a team. And, you know, I ended up having North America and having a tie to the global office and like helping being a decision maker in things that and being in rooms that I never would have had the opportunity to be in had I just gone in and given the what I'm paid to do, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
as
yeah.
you asked back earlier, to, going back to like, well, what if I'm only being paid X? Well, I was being paid 60% less than I had been.
Yeah.
For no good reason, right? Other than that they, you know, they wanted to do salary cuts and change my role.
Mm.
And working probably 10 times harder. But you know what? Within a year, I was making more than I had been making prior. And I left there with what I think doubled my salary. So
That is a huge, I mean, there's so many lessons in there, but that right there is such a huge lesson for anyone to take away, because that right, I mean, that takes a lot of mental strength to be able to like look that offer in the eye and like sit with it and think, okay, what are my options? And to like rationalize that and to really go, you know what? Fuck that. I am going to be the best whatever administrative, you know, and then like to reframe it like that, because that's like maybe I'd say like 10% of people or less would really be able to reframe it like that. You know, I think, and then most who would take that, I would say would just go and just be like, well, whatever, I'm going to get paid this now, you know? So, I mean, that's, I say that because I think I talk to people all the time. I talk to girlfriends all the time. Like they're always asking about that. And I'm like, seriously, guys, like it, like you apply yourself to something for a year or even a little bit less and you'll see that reward after like that time period, you know, but you just have to like believe that you are capable and that you are like this type of person, because then that will be delivered to you. But you have to be kind of willing to like kind of eat it for a little bit.
You have to. And I'm not saying you take disrespect, right?
Because
that's not anything you should ever tolerate. But I think it's like, you have to set an expectation for yourself of like who you want to be. Mm-hmm. And do I want to be the person who comes in and gives half-ass to something? Because if I like to believe like how you treat one person is probably how you treat everyone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like if I'm going to give this half-ass to this.
Yeah.
Then why would anyone ever think I would give 2000% to something else?
That's
right.
Very true.
And what does that say about me as a person and my character and my reputation? So did I enjoy it? Were there times where I wanted to be like, fuck this, I'm done?
Yeah.
Did I have to constantly have that conversation reminder with myself? Absolutely. Probably every single day for, I don't know, 6 to 8 months before like I started to get noticed. But I think you have to. And I think it's about setting the standard for yourself. It's like what you tolerate is ultimately like what's going to impact everything that you do. And it's a mental thing, but it's like you have to believe in yourself enough and have the confidence in yourself to know that no matter what happens, you'll find your way through it.
Totally.
Like no one's going to fix something for you. No one's coming to save us. It's nobody else's problem. It's my problem.
Yeah.
Like this is a gift. I have a job. I have health insurance. See this as an opportunity rather than seeing it as a loss. Like every setback, I try to always reframe as like, what is the opportunity? What is the lesson? Like any relationship that went goes sideways, it's like, why did that happen? How did I allow that to happen? How did I allow these people into my orbit? Like that's within me. I own that. But then also, what did I learn?
Yeah.
And like, what can I take from this to make sure that I only get better and never let that happen again? it's mental though. It's like, yeah, it's constantly, it's an everyday thing. And it, I don't know anyone who would say to you, yeah, it just gets better. Like, right, it gets harder before it gets better.
Yeah.
And then once it gets, once it becomes second nature, you're still going to have flare ups where you're going to doubt yourself. It's mm-hmm. just life.
How has all of that, especially the health part, and I guess more or less you could say, you know, facing potential near death, right? And coming to terms with such like a possible reality, mm-hmm. how has your life and your mindset shifted from that in terms of embracing life every day, embracing the fact that it is so fragile that it can go in a snap of a mm-hmm. finger? And how have you applied that? And how have you tried to like share that with other people to like, you know, because it's very easy for people on a daily basis to be like, oh, like, life is this way. And especially when they haven't, you know, whether had a loss yet or had a potential near-death experience, it's very different. And I feel like, for example, ironically, the way I look at things a lot is, I know this week it's 9/11, mm-hmm. and I definitely always, obviously living downtown too, feel that energy. The way I frame it is there's a lot of people who went too soon and wish they had a second chance at life, at love, at whatever. And so for me, interestingly enough, whenever I'm like just walking around like feeling meh, I always like look at the tower and I'm like, Emily, there are people that would die to have a second chance, literally. So just at least do it for them then. You know, if you're not doing it for yourself, like live like today for the person that would want a second chance, like you're in, you know, you're living right now.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's interesting. So when I went into the doctor's office, when the day that they told me that I had to have that second surgery, that mm-hmm. the tumor was still there, I was furious. Mm-hmm. Like I was beyond, I was like, this is impossible. Like, how did you allow this to happen? All of these things. And they put me in this room waiting for the doctor. And the walls were paper thin and I could hear the room next door. And I still, to this day, like it's 15 years and I'll never forget it for the rest of my life. This woman talking to the doctor, sobbing with her husband, begging him to come up with any solution to save her.
Wow.
And he was like, I'm so sorry. Like, there's nothing else we can do. And she's like, my husband, my kids, like, please, there has to be something else. I get the chills thinking about it. And I don't think I think she was probably not much older than me. And she's probably like in her mid-30s at that point. And that, well, let me tell you, with a wake-up call, I was like, who do I think I am to come in here with a chip on my shoulder that I have to go through a second surgery when literally like I have an option. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be uncomfortable. I'm going to have a scar. It's going to be painful, but I'm going to be fine. This woman is not going to be fine.
Wow.
Like, and that changed everything for me from a perspective of like, how lucky am I? What a gift. Mm. And she doesn't have a second chance, but I do
mm-hmm.
for her and for anyone else, for my mom, for, you know, all of the people. Like, I owe it to show up as the best version of myself, mm-hmm. to do more, to always give more. Like, what example do you want to set for, you know, like my brother, my nieces, my nephews? Like, I always want to show up for them to know, one, you can do anything you want mm-hmm. if you believe in yourself enough, that there's always a way forward and there's always a way through.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's what motivates me.
Yeah.
Is to like the other people around me, not so much for myself, if that makes sense.
Are you glad looking back? I know we didn't dive too much into this part, but we talked a little bit about it off air. You know, through the years, you certainly have pursued a lot of individual dreams and passions. Is that something you're glad that you ended up investing your time in, let's say, compared to like having a hyper focus on getting married and having children? And I know that's like a personal preference, but also too, I'm sure you may have also seen other people that have like went down that route and like put a heavy focus mm-hmm. on that and maybe are more unhappy right now, or maybe unfortunately like that marriage didn't last or whatever, right? Because I've as I am getting older, I'm seeing even glimpses of it. I know someone personally that like got married at 26 or 27, someone that she was with for a total of 8 or 9 years and got divorced at 31. Yeah. And so that was a reality check for me because I was like, oh, wow. Like, you know, she had the Tuscany wedding, like all of it. And, you know, 4 years later, it just was not right. And I'm like, okay, I think sometimes that's a good signal. Like, we always like envy or dream because we see all these fantasies and stuff, but sometimes like we just don't know. But I'm kind of curious your thoughts. And I know followers also submitted a question similar to that.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because I even when I was younger, I never dreamt of the wedding. I always dreamt of the person. Mm-hmm. But I always knew I wanted to, there was things that I wanted to achieve, and I wanted to prove to myself that I could achieve them without needing someone else to do it for me. Mm-hmm. Or like, and I think part of that was a maturity thing, because now I understand like building together is actually a really amazing thing. And I'm at the point in my life where I would love to build with someone.
Totally.
But I think for me, like focusing on my career was always a focus for me. It still is very much a focus. I mean, I say no to a lot of things, even, you know, friendship stuff now these days, because I'm so hyper focused on building like these new companies that I'm building, because I like thrive and I just love it. Like that to me is like extremely fulfilling. And it's not that I don't care or I don't want to be involved in other things, but I think, especially as you get older, like the fun thing isn't like going out to dinner as much as it's like building something.
Totally.
But I don't regret it. I think that I am such a better version of myself today. And I think when we're younger, we're so quick to like not want to be alone or like have the relationship.
Yeah.
And I went down that path earlier, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, and it's like, that's great. But if you're in this thing and you're putting your energy into this relationship and you're not the best version of yourself yet, then who is the partner you're attracting? Are they the best version of yourself? Like, and are you guys capable of growing together?
Right.
Some people can, some people can't. Yeah. And I, you know, I don't regret it. I think it's a personal preference, but I think it's ultimately about pursuing the path of like, for me, it's always been self-improvement and self-development and getting, I've never settled for anything in my life. So I'm like, why would I settle on the most important decision, which is your partner?
Yeah.
Because your partner impacts everything that you do.
Totally.
But I have also been self-aware enough to recognize that the level of the person that I see a future with, I wasn't at that level myself. So like, how could I ever, I was attracting where I was, right?
Right.
But if I want this person and I have this vision of this, if this person, I have to make sure that I am operating at that level, if not better.
Yeah.
And that's really the last like 2.5-3 years, like my laser focus has just been like, be the best version of myself so that I can attract the right partner. And I'd rather not date or not be in a relationship, because then let my energy bleed into those other areas.
Yeah.
Like someone was like, oh, just like go on a bunch of dates, it will be so fun. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it would be, but like, where am I I'm putting my energy into that, right?
Right.
And like, why would I put my energy into that versus putting my energy into just really like being the level of the person that I want to attract? And that's a personal like decision and a personal journey. You know, do I want a partner? Absolutely. Like, I know he's out there somewhere, but like, one, I don't leave the house enough. But, you know, I think it's important to like not do something because you feel, again, going back to lack, right?
Right.
Like you feel lonely or you feel like it's never going to happen. Well, if you have that mindset, then of course it's never going to happen.
Totally.
It'll happen when it happens.
Totally. Last few questions. Okay, this isn't a fun question I started to do. Because people often say, what do you wish you did differently at a certain stage of your life? I would say two parts. What is one thing you are really glad that you did that you would repeat again, whether in your 20s or 30s? And what is one thing you would go back and do differently?
I think one thing I would redo, I would do again and again and again, is always bet on myself and take chances and try different things. And I think from a career perspective, right? Like, gone are the days of like you stay at the same company for a decade. I think that that's great for some people, but I think learning and doing, you only find out what you want and what you don't like by doing. And I think action like breeds clarity. And there's many things that I'm like, oh, I want to do this. And then I start running down that path and I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I did that.
Yeah.
Because I realize I actually don't want that.
Totally.
And do I want these things for the right reason? Is it an ego? Because I want to prove something, or is it because like I truly, truly want it?
Yeah.
And you only find that out through taking action, and that breeds that clarity. One thing that I would, sorry, what was the second part of the question?
What's one thing you would do differently?
Oh, I would take those chances sooner.
Oh,
I would have bet on myself sooner.
Okay.
Yep. I was so terrified to leave the corporate world because I was like, I won't have a stable salary and I won't have health insurance. But then I didn't have it because it was taken from me. So I had put my future in someone else's hands at that point. And I also, you know, I was so afraid of like my stable salary. But, you know, yes, it took me a year of like barely not making money, but I tripled that next year, my earnings,
right?
And I could never go back to work in a corporate environment because I could never earn at the level I'm earning working for myself.
Right.
Like, and, you know, when you go from like mid six figures to making seven figures, it changes your life. And then you realize that like that only comes from truly betting and believing on yourself.
Yeah.
And it's not without pain.
Right.
But, you know, it's like what's worth it.
Right. And having that patience. Yes. Right.
It's the patience. Yeah. The payout, it's the patience.
Yeah. Yeah.
No quick wins.
Totally. One question from the card game. Do you believe everything happens for a reason, or do we have more control over our fate?
We have control over our reactions and how we interpret and allow ourselves to be impacted by something. We can have the same experience. The same thing can happen in this room, and you can perceive it one way and I can perceive it a different way.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately we can control, only thing we can control is ourselves and how we react to something and what we let into our energy field, into our orbit, and how we choose to, again, to react to it, right? And I think your reaction is what dictates your future. Your reaction or lack thereof, right? Ooh,
that's a good one. I agree.
It's self-discipline.
I agree. I really like that. Any book recommendations for the audience? Any book that stands out that you're like, oh, this is a must read, or this one really impacted my life?
I haven't been fully like dialed in on my reading recently.
Be a podcast.
Yeah,
too,
because I'm writing my own book now. So I'm trying not to read other people's books because I don't want it to like muddle my vision.
Totally.
But podcasts, like I started studying Kabbalah about 2 years ago with David Guyam. He has a podcast. I think he drops every Saturday. Incredible. Like if you're gonna start somewhere, and I was always like, I'm not very religious, it's spiritual, it'll just change the way you interpret how life happens around you. And it just brings true self-awareness. And I'm like obsessed with Emma Greed. I think that she's just brilliant. Like
She's great.
Yeah. A brilliant business person. So those are my two favorites.
Okay, I love that. We'll definitely always like link people's like recs and books and podcasts. So we'll link that in the show notes. Last question, and of course you've been asked this one before, but I'm sure you've had some reflections over the years and just through your journey as well. But when you think about all of that, what would you say fulfills you in life?
Yeah. And that's a question. It's funny. As I like go through different evolutions, I always think of you because I'm always like, wait, does this really fulfill me? And it's part of why I decided that I don't want to continue to make real estate my life or like my what I do as a career anymore, because it's not fulfilling for me.
Yeah.
I think it was. And I think for me, it was initially having to prove to myself that I could do it.
Yeah.
And then once I proved to myself I could do it, I was like, well, is this really a good use of my skill set? Probably not. And is it like fulfilling? Like, am I making the difference I want to? I think what fulfills me is being able to wake up and do what I want to do on my terms and know that I'm leaving a good, not impression, setting a good standard for my nieces and nephews to see like what good behavior looks like, what leadership looks like, not like in the business realm, right? But like in like day-to-day living and like leading a good, healthy lifestyle, like being emotionally engaged and aware of my own behaviors and how my behavior, my reaction can impact them or the people around me. So that for me is very fulfilling. It's like always working to be the best version of myself, not only for myself, but for the people who are important to me and like what example am I setting for them.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much, Jamie. Where can everyone find you? And you should come back for round three when you release that book.
Oh, because we'll
have so much more to chat about. But where can everyone find you, keep up with you, share everything?
Yeah, I think I'm most active on Instagram. So it's at Jamie Rikichi, JAIMERICHICHI.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll link that in the show notes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And that was all for today's episode with Jamie Rikichi. As always, if you enjoyed this conversation and you've been enjoying the podcast, it would mean a lot if you could quickly rate and review the podcast either on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. If you want the video version of this, It will be out on YouTube, and you can follow other guest conversations there that are recorded in video version on the What Fulfills You channel. That is also linked in the show notes. And if you are interested in the card game, which we briefly played on this episode, you can find the card game, the journal, and other fun merch at whatfulfillsyou.com. Thanks again for tuning in today. I will chat with you all in the next episode.
Come explore the wild heart of Utah with Oars. No notifications, no meetings, no signal. Just you, the river, and the space to reconnect with what matters most. From one-day adventures in Dinosaur National Monument to week-long journeys through canyonlands and beyond, Oars delivers unforgettable guided rafting experiences on some of the most iconic rivers in the West. Visit oars.com/Utah to start planning your next great adventure. Let's go rafting!